Good evening, ladies. I think I'm supposed to start this recording by saying the date, which I think is November 3rd, 2003. Thinking forward. The title of the class this evening is An End or a Means. We're going to be dealing with the, you'll see as we get along. I don't want to give away the title. I do have a syllabus, so to speak, of the next few weeks, what we're going to be doing, but it's oral. It's not written down. If you're interested, next week we're going to be talking about the Slav. Then we'll be talking the story of the Slav, the quail, the Jews complained, we have no food, we have no meat. God said, okay, here, I'll give you more meat than you could even handle. Then we are going to be doing the man, what the man looked like, what it tasted like, could it really taste like whatever you imagined, and how does it affect our daily lives today, even without the man falling down. Then we're going to do the story of, we're going to move into Navi. We're doing the story of Yael and Sisera. We're going to do that around Hanukkah time. It's actually going to be, I think, one of our last classes. Yeah, Yael and Sisera, and comparing it to the story of Yehudit and her Greek general. Then we're going to be talking about Amnon and Tamar, which is a case of food and rape. We'll be talking also 1 week. We'll have a class on wine, which I'm hoping to arrange a wine tasting as well at that time. And December 1st, you can mark your calendars. We're not going to be having class here. We'll be having class at the home of Gail Hennish in a joint program with Ezrat Nashim on Challah. It's December 7th, 8th. Sorry, December 8th. That's our second to last class. And it's going to be on Challah. It's going to start at 7:30, I think. We're going to start with putting together some dough. I'm going to give a short class, a half an hour or so, about the significance of taking challah, the halachot of taking challah, why we do it, why is it so closely connected to women, and all that fun stuff. And the question that's now arisen that I actually never thought of before, are you allowed to burn that little piece of challah in your oven, or does it make your oven chafe since the challah really cannot be eaten by you? Stay tuned. And then we're going to do braiding and stuff and fun stuff like that. So that's going to be December 8th. Thank you. They're correcting me. Okay, tonight I want to take a look at a very interesting story, probably one of the most well-known stories in all of Sefer Bereishit, particularly related to food, the story of the selling of the birthright, Esav and Yaakov. So I'd like you to, for a moment, just with your partner next to you, to look at the five psukim that I enumerated on your sheets. We're in chapter 25 of Bereishit, Parakaf Hei, psukim Chastet through Lama Dalid, 39 through 34. So please take a look at those with the person sitting next to you. And I want you to notice what is most striking about this story. And in addition, I wrote down a challenge question. Can you connect this story with the story of Jack and the Beanstalk? And I'm going to expand the challenge and say, can you connect the story with the food that's on the table in front of you this evening? So, and it is for your personal enjoyment, the bracha is ha'adamah, they are peanuts, and they're very salty, I think. They look salty. So, 60 minutes, and we'll discuss it in a moment. Okay, let's discuss. What is most striking about this story? Keep in mind that the title of our series of classes is called Food for Thought. So what is most striking about this story? It's like the most obvious question that you probably didn't even think of it because it's already there. What about the Korah?
The what?
The Bechorah, the birthright.
Okay.
First of all, what's the big deal about the birthright? What does it mean to give up the birthright?
I guess a certain privileges with firstbornship.
Right. The firstborn son gets double portion from what every other child gets.
The firstborn son, right?
The firstborn son.
Not the daughter.
Can you really give up something like that? Like being born a Kohen and you're just always a Kohen? I mean,
okay.
You're firstborn.
Can you give it up? Excellent question.
Why not?
And being that he did give, right, well, you can't switch being a Kohen. You know, there's that famous joke, Rabbi, I'll give you $100 to make me a Kohen. I can't. Rabbi, I'll give you $500. I can't. Rabbi, I'll give you $5,000 to your personal discretionary fund if you make me a Kohen. Rabbi says, I'm really, really sorry, but why anyway do you want to be a Kohen so badly? He says, I'll tell you truthfully, my father was a Kohen before me, my grandfather was a Kohen before
I
want to. So I want to be one too.
So you can give a gift to someone else.
But you, if you are a gift, so if it's a monetary issue as opposed to a privilege, a non-monetary privilege, then you're saying you could give that to somebody else.
Or a contract.
Okay, you could exchange it for something else. Something interesting to think about also at this point in Jewish history, so to speak. I mean, you don't really have a lot of Jewish history here. But at this point in history, if you remember your Chumash from later on, from Shemot and from Bamidbar, the Bechorim, the firstborn, were the ones who were supposed to work in the Mishkan. It wasn't the Leviim and the Kohanim. They weren't supposed to do any of the work. The firstborn son. So it was a dual, you could say that it was a dual privilege, the monetary that you get, and also the service that you're providing, the privilege to provide the service in the Mishkan. One could say, in which case, you really couldn't sell that part, possibly. But what's the big striking question here that also connects to death and the beanstalk and the food on the table in front of you? Which I think is a little more appetizing than last week's crackers and margarine.
Amen.
I hope.
Well, it doesn't, I mean, whatever he's giving up doesn't seem to be equal in value to a pot of soup.
Right. He sold his bechora for beans. Quite truthfully, right? Well, and peanuts being in the same category as lentils, you know, whatever, legumes. So that's why we have peanuts here instead of anything dried lentils would really go over.
I like the red lentils too.
I mean, that's really good.
Okay. So we look at this issue of Esav selling his birthright, be it a service privilege or a monetary privilege, selling it for soup, for beans, for bakkas, for nothing, almost nothing.
How do we know it's soup? Because all it says here is min ha'adom, ha'adom hazeh.
Excellent. Not only that, there's another description of what it is. There's another name. If you look in the beginning of Pasuk Chavtet, the word that's given to describe the food he's making is nazid.
Nazid. Okay.
So if we could define the word nazid, then we could understand what he's doing. So it's interesting. The Torah objectively is calling it nazid, giving it a name, giving it a title, giving it a, you know, sounds like some type of particular food. What does Esav call it? Give me that red stuff. You know, that's there.
Well, isn't it a stew? It's like a stew.
Okay. Yeah, so what I want to address this evening is the different approach of Esav and Yaakov to food. Is to one of them, you'll see, and that's the title of the class, an end or a means? Do they approach food as an end or as a means to an end? So let's start with Esav. Esav says, and this is one of my favorite sukkim in the entire Torah, Esav walks in and he says to Yaakov, ha'iteini na min ha'adom ha'adom hazeh. What is ha'iteini? He doesn't say give me, he doesn't say tamely, he doesn't even say ha'achilli, feed me. What does he say? Ha'iteini na. Take a look in source number one on your sheets to see what Rashi says. Ha'iteini, Rashi says, eftach pi u'shefoch harbe l'tocha. Let me open my mouth, just pour it down. Keep it coming. Pour it down my throat. Sounds like a very civilized way to eat.
Yes. Sounds like he's chilled and hungry.
It's such a great puzzle. How each hami na mina adom adom has that. Pour it down my throat. Pour that red stuff down my throat. I can't get enough of it. That's the first thing you know about his approach towards food. Not only is he so hungry and so starving, what do? Think of it this way, okay? After Motzei Yom Kippur, like Jesus as an example, Motzei Yom Kippur, we are all starving. You finish fasting 25 hours, standing on your feet all day. You're really, really hungry. How many of us just rush to the refrigerator and stuff things down?
No.
Nobody do, because first we're going to wash, or at the very least we're going to make brachas on our food. You're going to sit down. You're going to serve a meal. You're not going to just sit in front of the refrigerator and stuff things, you know, like daglet, make the daglet sandwich. You know, you're not going to do that right after a fast. You're going to sit down with some measure of control and eat that way. You're eating, again, to satisfy your hunger, but you're going to do it with control, being civilized in an appropriate way. What does Esav say? How each meaning? I just pour it down my throat. So what else do we know about Esav? How does food relate to Esav, and how does Esav relate to food? Look at the pasuk before the pasuk that I asked you to start looking from, pasuk kafchet, where we have the famous description of Yaakov and Esav. Vayahav Yitzchak, two psukim before.
Yeah.
Chavzayin. Vayigdalu ha-ne'arim, the boys grew up. Vayihi Esav ish yodeh tzayid ish sadeh. That Esav was a man, what does it say here? Who knows hunting, a man of the field. Yaakov ish tam yoshev ohalim. And Yaakov was a complete person or a calm person. It depends how you describe what that means. Yoshev ohalim, he would stay inside all the time. What does Rashi say in source number 2 about Ish Sadeh? What kind of person was Esav? Ish Sadeh, he says, Adam Batel, an idler. But he didn't just sit and do nothing. What did he do? So, Jeb Bekashto Chayot Ofod. He was a hunter. Food and hunting were his focus. He was, the hunt was what he hungered for, what he thirsted for. And that was, the great thing was the hunt. But how does he relate to the food part of it? So even here, I think, exactly. Like the animals he hunts, he becomes what he pursues, and he reacts to the food in the same kind of way. Just gimme, 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 gimme. And I want to show you, Rabban points out, in choice number 3 even, this exactly what Beth picked up on before, that he doesn't even call it by its name. He doesn't even call the food by its name. He says, give me from this min ha'adom ha'adom ha'zeh. It could be, he says, ha'ya ha'tavshil me'udam min ha'adashim shayu adamot. It could be that the soup was red because of the beans that he was using, because of the lentils. O she'rikho dvarim b'dvarim adamim v'asu v'esav lo yada' ma'haya v'karashimom adom. Or that there were other stuff in it that made it red. Esav didn't hear. He didn't say, give me that lentil soup. Give me that bisque with a cream base or whatever. He didn't start to specify here. He just says, give me the red stuff. I don't care what's in it. I just want it and give it to me now. Pour it down my throat. And then Yaakov, though, was a little bit smart. He saw that the food is so important to Esav, so he says, wait a minute. I'll give it to you on the condition that you give me something important as well. I'm going to give you something that's important to you. You give me something that's important to me. And how does the Torah view this? What does it say at the end of Pasuk Chavtet? Esau says, give me this red stuff. I'm going to die. And what about in the end of Pasuk Lamed? He says, give it to me, I'm going to die. And he says, give me the red stuff. Ramban explains, this is to tease him. You know, hey, there goes soup man. The guy who gave up his bechora, his service, his monetary reward, whatever it was, he gave it up for beans. There's the beans man. Lenny the lentil guy. There he goes down the block. To tease him and make fun of him that he traded something that's worth nothing for something that's worth a whole lot more than that.
Did he eat the food?
That's exactly where we're headed next. Did he eat the food he hunted? So now let's take a look in Radak, which is source number 4. Because
Edom,
Radak,
the nation later on?
The nation, yes, becomes known as Edom because of this comment that he made and because of this exchange that he made for beans. Okay, so Radak tells us as follows. Radak lived around the same time as Ramban, in the same kind of area. He says as follows. He says, we have to differentiate. The Torah is telling us a major difference between Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov, he says, was a great person, and Esav was clearly not. Yaakov, he said, because Esav was what he calls a gargaran. Esav was a glutton. He says, the greatness of Yaakov was that he didn't love physical things. What was he making? Was he making a cream-based mushroom bisque with three different types of wild mushroom and a heavy cream and half and buttermilk, and was he doing all this stuff with a roux, preparing a roux before? No, he made lentil soup. And that says lentil soup is the lowest of the low. It's not like a high quality food. Now, I know some people who make very delicious lentil soup, and lentil soup can taste very good, but Rajat is saying that on the scale of what's good food, what did Abraham give his angels who came that was good food? He gave them bakar, he gave them chama, he gave them chalav, the cattle, the butter, the cream, the milk. What's Yaakov making for himself? A chapsis pizza. This is really what it is. Chapsis, taking the frozen pizza, practically putting it in the oven. Not really putting a tremendous amount of effort into it. He's putting together this lentil soup just because he needs to eat, so he just took whatever he could find and he put it together. That's how the doc explains it. He says, and if you look right on the line, right under the arrow, he says, "She'ein tafshil pachot mimenu." There's no cooking thing that's on a lower level than lentil soup. Umasha mana mimenu. But the fact that he, Yaakov, held it back from his brother, until his brother sold him the birthright, even though it was his brother, this also shows us how great Yaakov was, that he was calculating, and he wasn't going to give, even though lentil soup may not be a very high quality food, he didn't, says Radak, it wasn't just something he put in the oven from the freezer. He did put some work into it, and he wasn't about to just give it to his brother, who clearly didn't really appreciate the texture, or the aroma, or whatever it was. He didn't appreciate it. He just wanted to drink it down. And he says that also, it's very interesting that here, he brings up the point that Lisa just said. Here, Esau is coming in from the field. What was he doing in the field?
Hunting.
He was hunting. He said he's very, very tired. And Rashi says he's very tired. He's tired of killing. It wore him out. He's plumb tuckered out. So he comes in after hunting the whole day. He has behind him, you know, the rabbits and that whole image of my mind of like the pioneers, you know, the baby cracker with the rabbits and the upside down deer and the pole behind him and everything. He has all his killed prey right there. And what does he want? Lentil soup. He doesn't want to put the effort himself into it. He doesn't cook his own food. He doesn't have the patience to waste and to wait and to roast his food on an open flame and, you know, to make it good. He doesn't want it. And take care of the organs and the
rabbits.
You started.
I thought you were getting too much information.
So he doesn't want to put rabbits. He doesn't even want to put the effort in to appreciate what he himself did, to enjoy the fruits of his own labor. All he wants is from Yaakov. He just wants it to throw it down his throat. So we have so far, here's what we have about Esau so far. Number one, he says, throw it down my throat. Number two, he calls it that red stuff. There's no appreciation for what it actually is. Number three, he'd prefer to have something prepared than something that he's going to put the effort into himself. Okay, so that's Esau's approach to food.
Totally has no class.
None whatsoever. Completely boring. That's what food is to Esau. Food to Esau is an end. That's what I'm here for. I kill for the food, even though I don't really want to prepare it. But I kill for food. Anytime I have food, it's just, you know, because I'm starving. This is the only reason why I want food. That's Esau. What about Yaakov?
Yeah.
Why was Yaakov making this food in the first place?
Because his father was sitting shivering.
Okay, so that's exactly what Rashi says. The Psukim had no indication of that whatsoever, it would seem. Although he explains in some calculation about when this was when Abraham died. And if you look on the next page, the right-hand column, the third or fourth line down, says, "Voto hayom made Abraham." On that day, Abraham died. And it goes through a whole explanation. Why did it's just on the on the next source sheet that you have on the back of the page.
Oh.
Source number 5. I'm sorry. That on that day Abraham died, and now she goes through the whole explanation. Why did Abraham die? So you shouldn't see how badly Esav was going to turn out, because Esav was really heading off the derech, as we like to say, into a really very bad way of life. Now look at the top of the second column. This just sounds very interesting. Rishel Yaakov Adashim. Yaakov made these lentils, l'chavrot et ha'avil, to provide the first meal for the mourner. The first meal after the mourning family comes back to the house after the burial is called the Su'udat HaVra'ah. So L'Havrotas Ha'avil is to give them this Se'udat Havra'ah, which is served by friends. They're not allowed, the Avelim aren't allowed to serve themselves, so the friends serve them. And there are certain types of food that we eat. And one food, Rashi says, this is why Yaakov is making these lentils, because lentils is a food that's customary to eat at that time. The Lama Adasim, he said, why specifically lentils? Why are they appropriate to eat at this time? Shedomot legalgal, because we're like a circle, like a wheel. Shehaavelut galgal hachozer ba'olam. So mourning is a wheel that makes a circuit in the world. We're going to explain that a little bit further in a moment. But there's another reason. I found this very interesting. There's another reason in an old edition of Rashi. It comes in parentheses right here. Ma'adashim ein lahem peh. Just like lentils have no opening, no mouth, kach ha'avel ein lo peh. The avel also has no mouth. Now, when I first read this, I thought to myself, because an avel, a mourner, has a very difficult time speaking. It's not a time for speaking, for saying rational things. It's a time for emoting, for just for expressing that way, not for expressing speech. But he says, no, but it has nothing to do with it. She'asur ledaber, because the avel is not allowed to speak when it's not allowed to speak. Ulufichach, and therefore, haminhag lehadrod ha'avel, therefore the customary thing is to give the avel this initial meal, v'tchilat ma'achalo beitin, to first give him eggs, shehem agulim, because they're also round, ve'en lahem peh, and they also have no opening, no mouth. Kach avel, also an avel, a mourner, kol shlosha yamim harishonim, the whole first 3 days of mourning, eino meishiv shalom l'chol adam, he cannot initiate conversation or give greetings to any person. Kol shekein she'eino shoel b'tchila, he certainly can't greet first, but he can't even answer a greeting of somebody. Yigimel v'adzayim, for the rest of the 7 days, meishiv ve'eino shoel, he can return greeting but not initiate greeting. So this, he says, is why we eat lentils. Okay, now the first one again, like the wheel thing, okay, life cycle, things keep going, things keep moving, things keep continuing, we don't see it, we don't understand it, but things are still keep going. The second one with the peh, I don't know, it seems very far-fetched to me. We don't eat it because it has no mouth, because an avel is not allowed to say hi to anybody. Not that the avel has a difficult time speaking, but he can't say hi to anybody. So I started looking through later halachic choices to see, okay, what are the reasons that they give for eating the eggs and the lentils? And believe it or not, the reason they give is the second reason, the mouth reason, the peh reason. That's the reason that they give why not to do it. So then I looked for a later source, and I figured since we're in Detroit, I think it's appropriate to read from a Kaima Levy Bowman. He says in his book, To Be a Jew, he says as follows. I'll put a little arrow there. This meal is called the meal of comfort. This meal customarily contains hard-boiled eggs, a food that has become a symbol for mourning and condolences. The egg's roundness, in a way, symbolizes the continuous nature of life, and perhaps also suggests that from despair they may follow renewal and joy. So that one, personally, more hit home with me than the pet. But the point is that what is Yaakov's approach to food at this point? It's a religious, a spiritual approach.
It's symbolic.
He's symbolic. He's giving a sign. He's trying to comfort his father. He's trying to give his father a message that it's difficult to reduce to comprehend at this time. Life goes on. But the cycle continues. This is the purpose of food for Yaakov. So that's how we end our discussion of the story of the selling of the birthright. But the food with Yaakov and Esav doesn't end there. We're going to skip Perek Chafav. We'll go back to it in a moment. Go to Perek Chav Zayin, chapter 27. Just a few pages later. Vayehi Yizaken Yitzchak. Yitzchak is an old man. Vatichena einav mirot. His eyes are getting weak. He cannot see anymore. And indeed, Rashi tells us that what Hashem was afraid that Abraham would see with Esav truly happened. Why, Rashi says, he's like a great Rashi. Why were Esav's eyes weak? Why were Yitzchak's eyes weak? Because Esav's wives were burning incense to their gods, and the incense made him blind.
Oh.
Esav is like a really bad guy, yeah, Esav's wife.
Yeah,
why did he go home then to his wife instead of going to the other Shem with Yaakov?
At that time, it could be that he wasn't married yet. He didn't get married until the end of Perek Chav Vav. But one thing that is interesting about who Esav chooses to marry, one thing when I teach Sefer Bereishit, I point out to my students that Abraham gives a message to Yitzchak, and Yitzchak gives a message to Yaakov that above everything else in searching for a wife, one is forbidden to marry a Canaanite woman, a Canaanite woman. To the point where Yitzchak, if you remember, had to go, and Yaakov also, had to go all the way back to Haran in order to find a wife. That was how strong was the prohibition against marrying a Canaanite woman, and the commentaries discuss why. But if you look at the end of chapter 26, Vayehi Esav ben arba'im shana, he was 40 years old, Esav, Vayekach isha et Yehudit bat be'eri hachiti. He took Yehudit bat be'eri, the Chitite. The Chitim were one of the Canaanite tribes that basmat bat elon hachiti also. Batiena morat ruach liyitzchak l'rivka. Yitzchak and Rivka did not like their new daughters-in-law. Just did not get along with them. And the Mepharshim explained because they were Canaanite women. They were Canaanite women. And that was the ultimate affront. You know, which is very interesting. Okay, so we had Yitzchak is getting old. Vayikra Esav beno hagadol, he called Esav his big boy. Vayomer eliv, he says, Bini, kiddo. Vayomer eliv, hineni yedad. Vayomer hineni zikanti lo yadati yomoti. I don't know when I'm going to die, I'm very old. Vatashana chelacha, tell yecha, vatashtecha, take your stuff, your sword, your bow, your gear. Vatei hashadeh vatudah lichayin. Go out to the field and hunt me down something. Vaseli matamim kasher, have to make me the food deliciously like I like it. Vavia li v'ochela, bring it to me and I will eat it. Vavor tevarechecha nafshi b'ter mamut, so that I may bless you before I die. So here we have food being the focus of the story. And as you know, and as you'll see if you read further on, take a moment, actually, with the person next to you, and you can use the English or the Hebrew. We're going to go over it afterwards a little bit in the Hebrew. But read through the next section of the story and tell me what role do you think the food has in the story? What's the connection here? We spoke about Esav's approach to food versus Yaakov's approach to food in the selling of the Bechorah. But now that the actual event is happening, where the transfer of leadership is coming from one generation, being transferred from one generation to the next, food again becomes plays a very central role. What is that role? So it's very interesting. I think it's very interesting. What is that role?
Where do we start?
Why does he not have to hunt, but Esav has to hunt? Why can't Esav just go to the flock?
That's a good question.
Because I guess the hunting makes Esav in a good mood, because that's what he enjoys doing.
Could be. Why would Esav have to be in a good mood?
Because he's going to do all this stuff. He's going to get this big blessing. Why wouldn't he be in a good mood?
So he should be in a good mood without having to go hunt.
But it doesn't. He's hyper.
It doesn't seem like he really cares about the bracha, because if he really, I mean, I don't think that would make him in a good mood. It seems to me like he's like, who cares about this bracha?
Also, or maybe he already sold the Bechorah, so it's not valid to sell the Bechorah. They have to fool Yitzchak now.
So that's another question. Mm-hmm. That's another question. If they sold it, why this whole subterfuge from Yitzchak? It's very interesting because the Mepharshim talk about why Rivka went through this whole process. Like, why didn't Yitzchak know that Yaakov was going to get the bracha? Why didn't he know clearly? And if you look at the beginning of Parsha Toldot, when Rivka's first pregnant with Yaakov and Esav, they're fighting terribly inside her, beyond what any woman she speaks to has ever experienced. And so she goes to a Navi, and she asks him what's going on, and the Navi says that the older one will be subservient to the younger one, meaning that Yaakov will be the leader and the ruler and the top guy and the one who really will get the Bechorah in the end. But the Mepharshim explained that she went without her husband's permission or blessing or knowledge altogether, which is very interesting about the relationship between Yitzchak and Rivka. And if you are interested, I'm going to return the favor to my husband, give a plug for his class on Tuesday afternoon at 1:30. Okay, he's going to be discussing when he gets to Parshat Toldot, he'll be discussing the relationship between Yitzchak and Rivka. So, yeah.
So that's next week. No,
but it's not told
next
week. Tomorrow's Lech Lecha. Right? Okay. So here's what we have.
Isn't there
why did Yitzchak need Esav to go get the food? So I was looking down in the footnotes here in your Chumashim on page 135, and the last paragraph on the left-hand column says as follows: Isaac's wish for food was to satisfy his bodily appetite, so that physical need would not interfere with his spiritual bliss. The prophetic spirit can rest only upon someone who is in a state of joy, which implies satisfaction of all one's needs. That the reason that Yitzchak needed to eat was so that he wouldn't be hungry at the time giving the bracha, because it was a time of intense spiritual emotion, and he couldn't have anything interfering with that intense emotion. Okay. I'd like to suggest something a little bit different than that. Why did Yitzchak want Esav to bring him food? Take a look at Rajak. I'm basing this somewhat on Rajak and mostly on the Tzukim. Source number 7. Ki yada. Yitzchak knew. He had to give Esav a bracha. Why? He lo haya ish hagun batov, because Esav was not a good, upright person. Aval Yaakov lo haya tzarich lebracha. He knew he didn't have to give any kind of bracha to Yaakov. He yada Yitzchak ki birkat Avraham lo tiyah, because he knew that Yaakov would get the continuation of Abraham's blessing. Uvoyit kayem hazera hamiyuchad laAvraham. And that through Yaakov, the unique seed, the special seed, will be continued from Abraham. He knew that Yaakov's kid would get Eretz Yisrael, that Yaakov would continue the legacy. He knew that the bracha was with Yaakov because Yaakov was a good guy. Esav was the one who needed the bracha because Esav was the guy who was not good at all. The Abraham, he continues, but Abraham gan came over Rach Yitzchak. That's such a big deal because Abraham never gave Yitzchak any bracha. So the clear descendant doesn't need the bracha. So why is Yitzchak giving Esav the bracha? Like that explains that Esav needed the bracha. He was so terrible. He was so bad. He was so evil through and through that if Yitzchak didn't give him some kind of bracha, Esav would have no hope for survival at all. So now I want to suggest the following. That the reason that Yitzchak needed Esav to bring him food was to, because if you see, he also doesn't just eat food. In the end, I think he brings him delicacies. No, okay, fine. So he brings him this food. Why? Because I think Yitzchak really needs to be in a very happy, satisfied state of mind to be able to give Esav any kind of bracha at all. Because he knows Esav's whole attitude toward food. That Esav has become the beast that he hunts. That he is totally consumed by that, and that he's totally focused on the physicality and the material and what food will do for him. But what is Yitzchak's approach to food? Why does he want him? And so here I'm going to use the overhead projector.
I thought earlier it said that he loved Esav because his game was in his mouth. Because
right.
of that.
Well, not, well, look at the Mepharshim for that. It's very interesting as to why he actually loved Esav. A lot of the Mepharshim explain because Esav was not that the game was in his mouth, rather that he was, because Chayit is a trapper. Yisir Be'er Chayit is one who knows to trap. And some of the Mepharshim explain that he loved Esav because Esav tricked him and trapped him with his mouth, with the words that he used to trick him into liking him more. And Esav was charismatic, and that's why he loved Esav. Not for anything real, but at this point, anyway, when it's down to the end of his life, and you know, you see the truth, I guess, I mean, thank God I'm not there yet, but you see the truth when you get to the end of your life, I think. You know, even all of us, as we get older, as you reach certain milestones, things become clearer to you, and what's important becomes more of a focus for you. And at this point in his life, he realizes that maybe the bronze of Esav, and some of us should say the reason he liked Esav so much was because Esav kept him fed. Esav gave him good food, he gave him fresh kill. You know, but even at this point, he realizes that that's really not the most important. Because what does he say here? Okay, right in Pasukal, he says, "Make me a shaving matzah, and make me good food, and we'll eat it." But avur tabarach achar nafshi b'tarmanut, so that I can bless you, so that my soul. Here we go, finger. Okay, but avur tabarach nafshi b'tarmanut, so that my soul can bless you. Rivka hears this, relates the story to Yaakov, and what does she say? Says that he said, that Yitzchak says he wants food so that he can bless his child before he dies. And later, when he brings Yitzchak, when Yaakov brings Yitzchak the food, Pasuk Yitzchak, Yomer Yaakov El Aviv, he says, Anochi Esav Becholecha, I am Esav, your firstborn, Asisi Kasher Digarta Eli, Zivri Yitzchomi, Tumna, Shiva, Ve'achla, Mitzegi, come sincerely eat from what I hunted, Ba'avur Tivarachani Nafshacha, so that you can give me the bracha. And indeed, in Pasuk Chafei, right before Yitzchak is ready to give the bracha, he says, Hagishali, serve me, will eat from what you killed, Lema'an Tivarachacha Nafshi, that the whole focus all the time of the food is not, I'm going to die, I need to eat, but rather, I need to bless you, I need to either put myself in a certain frame of mind so that I can give you this nevuah, or so that I can honestly give you a happy bracha because I don't feel so well now, but if I eat, I'll feel better. But the purpose for the eating is so I can give you this bracha, because I know the bracha is the most important. That's the end. And the focus is repeated several times. Yes?
Esau's big mila was that he did the mitzvah of kibbutz av.
That's what Rashi says. That's
okay.
Not what the psukim say.
No?
No.
Because this also, too, could be connected with the bracha. Because
okay.
His father knows that if that's the one mitzvah that he has, to intensify that mitzvah by sending him out
to do a mitzvah so that he can get the
bracha. Yeah, right.
So that is what Rashi says.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, because that follows Rashi's line of reasoning in terms of keeping this vote, in terms of being uncomfortable saying that Esav is totally and completely bad. He wants to say, you know, and also like Lisa brought up, being able to explain away somehow why Yitzchak loved him so much. You know, so that's why Rashi says, because he did the mitzvah of Kibbutz Av Ve'Im so strongly. So I think this is really neat, because you can see very clearly in the Psukim that the focus of the food with Yitzchak, with the bracha, is always in order to give the bracha. And I underline, even down at the bottom, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, all the way at the end, when Esav actually brings him the food, he too recognizes what the purpose of the food is to his father. So when he says, I am bringing you food, he says, I am bringing you food so that you can bless me. Realizing that to his father, the food is not an end.
I missed it maybe. What is the significance of the food for Yitzchak's contribution?
The significance of the food for both?
For
no, that's sort of what Rashi explains. But what I'm trying to point out is that the point of the food, according to Yitzchak and Yaakov, and all of the Yavo, even you could follow all the way through, is a means to achieve something spiritual, a means to achieve a spiritual end, to use the physical that's necessary. I need to fill myself up so that my hunger won't bother me when I'm giving you this spiritual experience of a bracha. Or I need to fill myself up so that I can feel good about something when I'm giving you, you horrible kid, this beautiful bracha.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but either way, the food is not because I'm hungry, because I'm starving, because I want the food. It's because I want another purpose that can be accomplished by eating this food. I feel uncomfortable afterwards. And I think that in Pasuk Chafbet, what I backslap there when he says, HaKol Kol Yaakov Vayadayim Yidei Esav, I shouldn't say I'm really stretching it on this one, but I think it goes. Okay, but Yaakov is all about the kol. Yaakov is about the voice, about what comes from inside, about the spirituality, about the things that aren't physical. And what's Esav about? Yadayim. HaYadayim Yidei Esav. Esav is about the outside. Yaakov had to put on the skins that Esav wore, because Esav had become that beast. He was wearing the beast. He was hairy all over. He was like the beast physically. So Yaakov had to appear like the beast, had to actually go into this physical being of Esav that is all focused on physicality and food and materialism and stuff like that. So that's, I'm not finished yet. Now these two stories, you have the first, the selling of the birthright, that's totally focused on food, the lentil soup. Then you have the actual transfer of the birthright that also seems to be focused around food. I mean, to mention the same concept of food five times in one within 31 psukim is not a coincidence. It has to be a purpose for it. But here's the cool part, but I don't know what to do with it. I have to tell you honestly. Look at the beginning of Perek Chafav, which is the parak that divides the two stories.
We'll help you. Don't worry. We'll see.
Okay. Here we go. I'll give you just a quick synopsis of Perek Chafav. Yitzchak and Rivka go down to Gerar. And there they meet Avimelech. And Avimelech, he tells Avimelech, he does the same thing Abraham did. He lies to Avimelech and says, Rivka's my sister. And then Avimelech really wants to have Rivka, but then he sees Yitzchak and Rivka enjoying each other's company a little too much for brothers and sisters, that they would enjoy it. And so he says, how could you lie to me? How could you do these terrible things to me? Get out of here, you're embarrassing me. And then they have this whole other conversation about wells and everything fine. But how did the whole story start? Look at the first pasuk of the parash. Na'yehi ra'am ba'arash. There's a famine in the land. What do we do with that? There has to be something, right? I don't know. Food for thought. Think about it.
They have plenty of lentils.
Have a wonderful week, and we'll see you back next week. And to Sam, we'll be talking about the slab, the quail story.
Thank you.